Good afternoon. I am your co-host, Maria Gerard, and you are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change here in the Dawnland. We explore topics such as restorative justice, restorative practices, decolonization, cultural revival, and more. Our guests are people involved in aspects of truth, healing, and change work. This program is offered in an effort to share, inspire, and inform. Dawnland Signals is a collaboration of Wabanaki Reach and WERU-FM.
Hello, I'm your co-host, Esther Ann. Today, we are talking about creative ways to move toward truth, healing, and change in the Dawnland. When Reach seated the Historic Truth Commission focused on Wabanaki experience in Maine child welfare, we were overwhelmed at the number of Mainers who reached out wanting to help, really wanting to be part of this historic process of truth and reconciliation. And some of those very Mainers have created their own structures and processes of decolonization in their own communities. They've taken those seeds of restoration that were planted during and since the Truth Commission process, and they continue to be engaged in truth, healing, and change here in the Dawnland. So we're pleased to have as our guests today, members of MEAG, or Mid-Coast Indigenous Awareness Group. MEAG began in 2015 and is a group, I took this from their website, I'm not this eloquent, it's beautiful, a group of Mid-Coast Maine residents working to raise awareness in ourselves and others about local and regional Indigenous cultures, histories, and current challenges through education and programming. Our goal is to support learning and take the actions to be good neighbors to all people living on Wabanaki land. Their webpage is meag-group.org. It is rich with information about upcoming events. They have a myriad of resources that are characterized by type. We just went through our website, so I'm really into this, looking at websites. And you have a Black Lives Matter statement and many ways to engage, including a reading group, donating your stimulus check, that was great, and supporting how to support Wabanaki tribes and organizations like Reach. So we're grateful to have members of MEAG with us here today. But before we welcome them, we would like to first start with appreciating the land.
Thank you, Esther. Yes, let's just pause for a moment to acknowledge the land beneath our feet. Wabanaki, the land of the first light, the dawn land, land that has known Wabanaki ancestors, the tallest trees and the oldest rivers, land that has known peace and conflict, land that has nourished us and sustained us since time immemorial. We acknowledge the indigenous peoples of this land, Wabanaki, the Passamaquoddy, Penobscot, Mi'kmaq, Maliseet, and Abenaki, and we give thanks to your stewardship and resilience. Nadal Nabem Nawak, we are broadcasting from WERU Studio in Blue Hill, Alamusik, Wabanaki.
Well, one, Maria. So today we are meeting with two members of the group MEAG. We're awesome. So great to have Mia Beal and Ron Nicholas Savisky in our presence today. We're having a virtual visit over Zoom. So I'd like to let them introduce themselves. Mia, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Well, I speak to you now from what's now called Brunswick, and a place of really rich lands, rich marshes, formerly tons of blueberries, lots of shellfish. So I'm really grateful to be here. I've lived in what's called Maine now since 1971. I'm a retired psychiatric nurse. I had a holistic nursing practice. And But what's really drawn me to this work is my own ancestry. Jeffrey Hotchkiss, who works for REACH, is actually, he and I have talked about this a lot. And some of you already know, I had a great, great, great uncle who was the first superintendent of Indian Affairs in California. And he started First Indian Reservation, Tejon, or Sebastian Indian Reserve. And I had to go through a lot with that, a lot. And I have Lisa Brooks helped me investigate the history more. I've been out there and see what work I can do with some of the descendants of people who were kicked off the land. When I moved to what's called Maine, I had no idea that I had ancestors here. Well, now it turns out I have a lot. And, you know, Maria, a few days after you visited, I found out almost by accident that my great, 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 great grandparents lived almost exactly where I live now, in the 1720s, 30s, 40s. The grandparent of the man was an indentured servant to what's now Berwick from the Battle of Dunbar. And then some of their descendants, my name is Camilla Beale, Camillus Beale, lived in Bangor about the same time as Molly Molasses. So I went to interview him, but unfortunately he's not alive still. And Jedediah Herrick, my great, great, great grandfather, he was sheriff of Penobscot County around the War of 1812. There were more. And I used to feel a lot of guilt and shame, but now I just feel a big root here and a desire to untangle the history for myself and for others. And also the other thing, Maria, I told you that you asked how we met once. And we met, was it 2015 when the legislators walked out from the legislature? And that was a momentous event for me. I really didn't even know what sovereignty was then. And I felt this something pulling me there, but I was like, I had all this resistance. I won't find a parking place, you know, all this super important reasons. And I went there, and that's where I met Ted Konalakis, who asked me to join the Episcopal Committee for Indian Relations also. And my former husband, David, who were on the similar path, David Smith. And I was very moved by the event. I'm walking back to my car and there's somebody walking with me. And I didn't know who he was, but I just said, I just really felt like I had to be there. Something pulled me. He said, I did too. And it turned out he was from Adakmagook. And he talked about how long it had taken him to come and how many hours off of work it had taken. And he told me about some of what they went through growing up in Princeton, not being able to get their hair cut and, you know, the vote not happening for so long. And afterward, he said to me, you know, this is really for all of us. And I was actually in an altered state for a bunch of days after that. That was like, okay, yeah. I mean, I knew it was true, and I knew it in a much more deeper way than I did before. So that's why I'm here. That's a long-winded introduction.
Well, I love it. And the word serendipity comes to mind in a lot of what you have to say about how you ended up coming back and living almost exactly where your relatives were. And that's not the first time I've heard stories like that. It's interesting how it's almost like the land calls you back. You know, you got work to do, right?
And Karen Martin was really helpful. She kind of helped me with all of this.
So we'll get into some more conversation, but first I wanted to say hi to Ron. And Ron, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks for having us today. It's a pleasure to be with like minds and good people. I appreciate your having us. I presently live south of Brunswick, Miagas, Brunswick-based or Midcoast-based, but I live in Yarmouth. I've been here for a few decades, but I am from the central Maine area of Polish and Maliseet Wolastoq roots. I grew up on the Kennebec River in the place that was at one point occupied by the Taconics. So I have fond memories of living there. And my journey has been interesting. I met up with folks that eventually formed the MEAG group at a legislative hearing in Augusta that I attended. There was an effort, the last one that didn't pass, to establish Indigenous Peoples Day in our locale. And I was so impressed by the testimony that I heard from some of these people that I made it a point to meet them after, and I kind of tagged along with future meetings that group had, and eventually MEAG was born. But I was in the middle of establishing a new journey for myself. Learning of my native roots later in life was exciting, but overwhelming. And it was just wonderful to encounter people of like minds that have the same viewpoints that I was learning. So I am happy to be with you today.
Well, we're happy to have you. And so I wanted to hear more about MEAG, Mid-Coast Indigenous Awareness Group. What is this group and how did it get started?
Yeah. Do you want me to start, Ron, or do you want to say more?
Sure. Why don't you?
Yeah. Well, and actually, the preview of it getting started was, I don't remember, maybe it was even 2014. I'm not sure when, or probably 2015 when Rosie Paul and I decided, I mean, I've had the idea about Indigenous People Day for a long time. I mean, I used to have fires around here for Indigenous Peoples Day and they'd say, what's that? How do you pronounce it? And so I called Rosie, we got to have Indigenous People Day here. She said, yeah, we do. And so we got the Penobscot River film for the Bath Library. And again, we were overwhelmed by the number of people who came, who were interested. Sherry Mitchell came down to talk. And then I just pursued it. We got to have it here. And I reached out to Kathy Cyrus, who is part of the UU Church and the Social Action Committee. And, you know, she's a real doer and a real reliable person. And I talked to Karen Martin and we began to meet. And how are we going to do it? Dan Marks was part of it and Ashley. And went through a lot of stuff, but after it was denied by the state, we eventually really worked hard with the town council and we got it into the town council. It was kind of hilarious. There was some pushback, but it got in and then, so we decided, well, this isn't enough. We gotta keep going. And some of you might have met Zoe Chiaffi, my wonderful 30-year-old friend, who said, let's do a film series. So we did a really little film series over the summer.
Over the summer. What did we have? We had three films and three, like they all with a lot of food and discussion, which is really helpful to build the community. And one of them, I think I even talked with you about it, Maria, before I did it. It was about the land claims. One of them was about the river. And one of them, we showed the Mitzik film, Wabanaki, A New Dawn. Mm-hmm. And always 30 or 40 people showed up, which was very surprising to us.
So it sounds like the roots of MEAG grew out of some advocacy and activism work. Is that right?
I guess it is. Yeah.
And then turned into some education.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Maria.
How do you see the birth of MEAG, Ron?
Well, I became part of the group after the legislative hearings in Augusta for establishing IPD. And I was just searching, needing to connect with people who could help me feel welcome, encouraged me to explore my roots. And I was able to get that affirmation and feel really connected to the group that testified. So I started attending the meetings that started, and kind of haven't left since. I've been connected to the group, and we've morphed into different iterations. A grassroots organization for sure, and that was a good way for us to start, good way for me to start with a group. But we grew in time to be a bit more organized. So I'd say I started with a group probably in the fall of 2016, mm-hmm. when we started talking about IPD for the Brunswick area. I had thought that would be a great thing for me to try to establish in my town. And when I learned that there were other efforts, I was very intrigued and wanted to participate and be part of the learning.
So I would agree that you're more organized after looking at the website. It was great. I really especially appreciated how you organized the resources by different type and category. That's something that we'll have to think about, because it made it everything so easy to find, you know, because by podcast or video or so can you describe some of what MEAG has to offer? The community and offer people some of your programs or events or what you provide?
Before I say that, I just want to say kudos to Rocky Coast Lodge.
Oh, nice.
For the website.
Really? That's wonderful to know. That's a name we have in common right now.
I know. Well, Z is a wonderful person. Just wonderful, and adds so much in so many ways. And if it were not for Rocky, the website would not be what it was. You know, a lot of us supplied photos and events, and Jerry helped us organize it too. So I just want to give credit where credit's due.
You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Maria Gerard, along with co-host Esther Ann. Dawnland Signals is the monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. And today we're talking about creative ways to move toward truth, healing, and change in the Dawnland with our guests, Mia and Ron from the Midcoast Indigenous Awareness Group. So we were just going to talk a little bit about what sort of programs and what sort of offerings that MEAG has.
And I could add that we learned that the importance of visioning needed to be a key piece of how we carried on and how we succeeded as a group. We are grassroots, as I said earlier, but we recognize that we need to have some vision. So once a year in early spring, we would have a visioning happening, and we would invite our circle of friends to help us create a vision. And of course, you were mentioning the website, and that was part of the vision. We knew that we needed a website that would fit our mission. So I just wanted to mention our visioning needs and experience.
I'm so glad you did, Ron. And that also reflects our need to be in tune with the community, not just going off like a rocket ship of our own. And of course, you know, when we started up until the past pandemic year, things are obviously different since the pandemic. But we had a lot of events. We welcomed people here to speak. We posted films, always with food. Zoe was great at saying, we have to have food. We have to make people feel comfortable and have conversation. We did a few field trips. Jackie Devenell said, you have to have field trips. So we did a few, and we did it to the Holding Up the Sky exhibit in Portland. And we did it to the Beauty We Carry that Jennifer Neptune curated. And Jennifer came and spoke with us then. And, you know, We've done a reading group that's gone on consistently for a number of years. And I was just looking, preparing for this, and I saw that since the pandemic, we've had 10 books. I think we wanted to see each other in some ways. Mm-hmm. Of course, everything had to take a real revolution with quarantine and Zoom. I had to learn how to operate it, for one. But as you saw from the website, there's a bunch of things we've done. This was Dan and Ashley really helped with that. We put out a notice about people getting stimulus checks, and we researched places where maybe they would be useful. So I hope that was useful. We've been talking to our legislatures about the Wabanaki Sovereignty Acts. Like I said, we've continued with the reading group, and I can say more about that later. And the website, we really updated. And more recently, in a response to the fact that new Veterans Memorial has gone up in Brunswick, and one of the memorials is to the Indian Wars. And some of us were aghast at that. We found out more about the process, but a group of us is meeting to try to really deepen the awareness in Brunswick about the real history in this area. We're in the formative stage now. It's just beginning, but it just seems... One thing that a professor at Bowdoin, who's on the committee, Susan Kaplan, some of you might know her. She runs the Inuit Museum, and she's done classes on memorials. And she said one of the reasons that a lot of the wonderful workshops here really don't take root, even the REACH ones, which are great with people every day, is people are walking every day by colonial monuments, you know, by the mill, by the place of the old fort, you know, and there's no deeper awareness. So we're working to begin to see that.
I think that's so important when you think about who gets to tell the story and how are they telling the story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that paying attention to the historical markers and the way that towns are telling their story is really, really important. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. And I was also aware of some mention of the Indian campaigns, as they were called, because in the State House in Augusta, they have a plaque that's hanging on the wall in there, memorializing all these different war campaigns. And one of them says Indian campaign, and, you know, it really makes you wonder when you go into the State House and you see something like that so present. And also want to give a shout out, because I know that Brunswick Library has been really great in offering space and collaborating with the group. I was invited down there a couple years back to MEAG to talk about the land claims. And it's just really a wonderful space and a really great community that you have nurtured with this group. Ron, did you want to add some more?
I think it's no secret that we've had a lot of Indigenous Peoples Day events in October. So those have been interesting and fun to sponsor. And I noticed, you know, we started out with movies and lectures and food, and over time they developed into something quite expansive. I think we've had as many as 5 events around one Indigenous Peoples Day. And that took a lot of work and effort, but we were pretty well excited and enthused to honor IPD. And after the fact, we'd say, wow, that was a lot. Wow, how did we do that? But when you're with like minds who are encouraging each other to explore, to learn, it's pretty easy. I remember in 2019, our Indigenous Peoples Day, we had just passed IPD in the state, and I helped spearhead that event. And I thought we should be celebrating not only IPD, but celebrating Native culture, including music, storytelling, language, and of course, food. You got to have a feast when you get together. And I had the good fortune of being part of I call them language warriors. There's maybe 10 or 15 of us that have studied the language locally, which I'm extremely grateful for. So I had members of our language warrior group to come to IPD and sing and tell stories. And it was just a wonderful evening. We had a youth group, Heather's youth group, Maui Donich, sang, and they brought the house down singing the Mi'kmaq song. That was just a special, special night.
And all their mothers and grandmothers came.
And we even did a round dance after the food. So it was. So if you look at events that we sponsored, they seem to have more depth as time wears on, and that kind of goes with the environment today. We, as a locale, we're all digging very deep in comparison to what we did a few years ago.
Absolutely. And I just say last year, of course, it was recorded, but I thought it was beautiful. It was called Voices from the Mid-Coast, where, you know, with the intention was there's so much silence and invisibility about Native people here. So Ron talked and told his story. Heather did an amazing presentation, Heather Augustine, and really urged the non-Native people in the audience to come invite us to your tables when you're discussing these things, which is great. And Miku Paul did a presentation, and three of the Native American Student Association students from Bowdoin came. So, and talked about what it was like to be Native in Brunswick and also about their history. So it seemed like it was really a nice event. Unfortunately, we didn't have food.
All this talk about food's making me hungry.
You know, we held, Reach held our annual, the last wellness gathering we had before the pandemic in Southern Maine, in Portland. And when you look at the numbers of Wabanaki people and where we live in the state, you know, I think most people have this idea that everybody lives on the reservation, those areas, and that's it. And there's so many Wabanaki people everywhere. So I when I listen to you, Ron, talk about, you know, Heather's youth group, Maui Donage, and I love that idea of Wabanaki people reclaiming their space and then non-Native people helping to create that space for them. I really like that because there isn't a lot of places that there's, you know, that, and I, you know, it's a struggle that, because I worked for the University of Southern Maine, and that's one thing I wish they would do is really provide that space for Wabanaki people to gather and get together in Portland, because it's important to have.
So that was one thing that became apparent to me when I was invited to MEAG to talk, was that MEAG was more than just this group of non-Natives educating themselves about Native issues or Native history, but it was also a place where Native peoples who were living away from their home communities could find a place to connect in and to be part of the group.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, I missed that with the pandemic. Heather would invite me to her Maui Donish group, and it was so great to just hang out.
Why would you say that MEAG is important? I do believe MEAG is important. What are some of the reasons that you would come up with for saying so?
Well, I would say we're all on a journey in our locale. And the more we can share in the journey, the better off we all are. I think MEAG has some importance because we can, you know, plant seeds in the hearts and minds of people of all ages. And I think the journey we're on will take a long time. There's a lot of fixing that needs to be done. It's going to take a long time. So encouraging people to explore, planting seeds, especially with the youth, I think is critical. There's a lot of curiosity out there, and it seems to be spreading. So I think if we can encourage people to become involved, to learn more, to understand the real history and meet with other like minds, I think we're all in this together. I would drive down the highway and see when the pandemic was coming on, you would see the signs on the road. We're all in this together. And what came to mind first was, we're all in this together with respect to learning about the Native history and recognizing that there's a lot of work to be done, and let's get together and do it.
Yeah, I would really agree with that. It's also, at least my own process, and I think of people that we're working with, consciousness change is not like just a thought. You know, it's not like something that happens, you read a news article and you say, oh yeah, they're right, we're wrong, or something. It's embodied, it's deep, it takes time. And I will say that I think that that's happened and is happening in our reading group, because it's been some of the same people for years, and more people at it. And as we study the history a lot, things are linking together that we never thought would. Studying about, you know, the anthropologists here, and, you know, seeing them come up again in different areas, and about the wars, and, you know, it's linking together. So also the ground I walk on feels more real. It doesn't feel always peaceful, but it feels more real. And I think, and a lot of people at the reading group are talking about, oh, and look at how this applies to now. Look at how this is still happening. And some of the people in the reading group are active. Quite a few are active. And I think some are becoming active. Some are new. Some have never really heard of, didn't know anything, and are. But with the people who've been there for a long time, the discussion always goes pretty deep. And my only job is to bring us back to the book sometimes. But it's been really a joy to do that. I mean, because I'm a terrible reader and it makes me read. And I would say the other really key part of MEAG is community. And just keeping with it. Because when we've got more trust, it just deepens. I mean, Ron and I talk several times a week, and there's community with our steering committee. We need each other. We're all volunteers. We don't have jobs, but we all have jobs. And community in the reading group, and growing community with the land and the waters. And I think those are all really important.
Thank you, Mia. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Esther Ann, along with Maria Gerard. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change in the Dawnland. Today, we're talking about creative ways to move forward toward truth, healing, and change with guests Mia and Ron from MEAG, Mid-Coast Indigenous Awareness Group. And we just got done talking about some of the important points that make MEAG so important in the community and in Maine. So if people that are listening are interested in getting to know MEAG and maybe joining a reading group, or maybe when you have events again in the future in person, I was thinking about, we did last summer during the pandemic, we did Indian Radio Days. We recorded over Zoom and then put together a film. And that was really because we had been looking forward to doing it for MEAG, right? Wasn't it MEAG we were going to do Indian Radio Days for, Maria? Before, was it MEAG? Okay, for it was somebody. So it just I say that because it's been so hard this past year not being able to get together. And this, when the pandemic hit, we started an online program committee, and we have never met in person. But it's been such a connection for us through this pandemic. There are people on that committee that I haven't even met. And it's, you know, but I feel like I know them. So when you get events going again, and maybe you're doing online events now, what is the best way for someone to get in touch with you?
Well, I think really, do you want to say something, Ron? You look like you're about to talk.
Well, we'll probably say the same thing. So take it away.
If you go to our website, there is an email that you could email us. You also we have a Facebook page, Midcoast Indigenous Awareness Group, and they could send a message on that. So there's the best way. And then we do have a mailing list. So when people come to an event, we, you know, with their permission, we add them to the mailing list. So there's emails too.
And we do get emails. People requesting to be on the mailing list. And I'm not sure what the number of people is, but it's pretty expansive these days.
I'm not sure either. It's like I say, my tech skills are really bad.
And what is the email address for MEAG?
Do you have it?
It is info.meag@gmail.com. info.meag@gmail.com.
And if folks sign up for your email listserv, how often do you communicate and what kinds of things do you share with people?
Well, this is something that's in process.
Okay.
and you know, Rocky, again, has volunteered, and we're working to getting out just about monthly newsletter about what we do, but it hasn't manifest yet.
That's an undertaking. Monthly is really difficult to maintain. I applaud you. That's ambitious.
We came up with the idea when we realized that our annual visioning in-person experience was not going to happen. So we figured out that maybe a good approach would be, a good replacement would be to do a newsletter.
Great. So Esther had mentioned at the beginning of the program how, you know, early on in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission process, we had so many people that were contacting us and wanted to volunteer in some way. And we really didn't have, you know, the jobs for people to volunteer, but we wanted to capture people's enthusiasm. So that's when we started the workshops, which were originally called Ally Building Workshops. And so I think that's what you had spoken of, Mia, when you said that you had connected in with a workshop. And one of the things that we tried to encourage people to do was to, you know, take that knowledge and do something with it, to sort of, you know, we sort of saw ourselves as throwing a pebble into the pond and creating these ripples that would go on. And it sounds like that's what MEAG has done. Mm-hmm. So I really applaud that work. And then I wonder if someone else wanted to do something similar to MEAG, what sort of advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Did you want to say something, Ron? I see your lips moving.
I think that's a great question. And what comes to mind is sharing your enthusiasm or your interest or your curiosity with people that you meet with. In my town, we have a community network Facebook group. And that might be a good spot, a good place for people to consider reaching out to see if there are any others nearby that might be interested in exploring, like you are, or like the person that's wondering how to get started might be. So the Town Network Facebook group route. And I was also thinking, you know, some church groups have active social justice commissions, and that might be a good place to start as well. There's a church in my town that is pretty active with Native issues and Native studies. So you got your local history centers as well.
Yes.
I stopped by mine one day and asked, you have got a great lecture program, but have you considered having someone speak on Native history, particularly of this area? And that was fairly well received. We're not on the agenda yet, but that's another option. Maybe visit your local history center.
Yeah, that made me remember that the incredible importance of the UU Church here in getting started. And also Lee Kirshner's church in Yarmouth. Is that the one you're talking about?
It is.
Ron, and that's where I met Karen Martin. And yeah, I think those are all really important. I would say once you gather a little group, there's a lot of interest now. There's a lot of interest. At least for me, it's had ebbs and, you know, high tides and low tides. And the most important thing is just to keep at it and to keep the fire going. You know, a lot of us now know in our bones that, like that guy said to me, this is for all of us. And it's really like life or death for all of us, really. You know, it's global war. It's important. It's important to know where we walk. It's important to learn from our history. And the brighter that fire is and the deeper the commitment just to keep going, I think a group will keep going. So sort of addressing it from a different way than Ron does. And Ron, can you talk about music at all? Just he's an expert singer and musician.
Well, I do come by music as a trade, but it's been great to be able to transfer my love for song and dance as I explore my native language, which includes song, of course. So that's pretty powerful. I consider myself more of an arts person than a historian, but we all have our, you know, key areas of interest. But I have really enjoyed learning the language in recent years and applying that to music.
Feel free to share a song if you'd like, Ron. We have time.
Oh, do you want to do that? Did you do the honor song, the Aristocrat honors? What did you do?
I did the Wollastoq song. So the Wollastoqwe are people of the beautiful and bountiful river. And we have a song called the Wollastoq song. It's the river song. I don't have my drum with me, but I'll hum a little or sing a little bit for you if you'd like. Wollastoq pomeluque, ajite pomegu, Wollastoq omeluque, subek almiad, nikwas pomipin, wazizuch nilas komil, nikwas pomipin, wazizuch nilas komil. So what you heard was Wollastoq is flowing. It's flowing and growing, flowing down to the sea. Mother, carry me. A child I will always be. Mother, carry me. A child I will always be.
Oh, geez. Thank you so much, Ron.
That was beautiful. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. You don't even need a drum.
Yeah. That was the first song in the language that I sang publicly.
So, anything else that you'd love to add about MEAG or your journey of learning. Would love to hear more from you. We have about 13 minutes left. Is that right? I always have to look to Esther to check my timekeeping.
Well, I think about 13, 14 minutes. Yeah. Okay.
You want to talk about your journey, Ron? I could talk about mine.
Before I do that, I just wanted to mention the importance of persistence in getting people to listen, to be curious, to ask questions about what went on here hundreds and thousands of years ago. There are still people that don't think about that yet. And the work will take a long time, more than our lifetimes. We see encouraging signs out there these days. But I think it's important to energize the youth who will carry on our work to expand awareness and learn to live as good neighbors. The Indigenous will not go away, as well as the non-Indigenous. So why don't we make the best of the situation and learn to live together, be as one.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to mention.
I like that. Learn to be good neighbors.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the MEAG group has been beneficial to me in so many ways. After I learned of my native roots, I'm a member. I shouldn't say member. Hit myself again. I am a citizen of the group in Quebec. We have 8 Maliseet reserves, or Wolastoqiyik reserves, and mine is Wolastoqiyik Wasibegok. So our band was formed in the late 1980s. By that time, all the land was gone, taken from the people. And the area expands from about 150 miles east of Quebec City out to the Gaspé Peninsula. Mm. So I get to make trips there and visit with distant relatives and other tribal citizens. So that's always pretty powerful. Most of my relatives ended up at Tobik First Nation. There's much turmoil in the homeland back over many years, there was a lot of turmoil. But my grandparents decided to assimilate elsewhere, and they ended up in Maine, and never to tell their story about where they were from. So my own mother and her siblings grew up not knowing their real roots. Half of them went to the grave not knowing much about, if anything at all, about their parents. So it's been a wonderful journey to get to know more of the history and more of the relatives. And joining the MEAG group kind of was a good support group for me. And I like to say that as I try to make up for lost time, I feel less isolated and encouraged and comforted as I get to know others nearby, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous, that want to learn truths and support and propel the real narrative forward and work to elevate Indigenous awareness. So I've always felt a warm appreciation from the group as I not only learn more about my history and culture, but work with like minds to, like I said, propel the real narrative forward.
Yeah, thank you. Should I say anything more, or are we running out of time here? Yeah, I just say, Ron, you were also asked to give an opening statement at your band, right? And to be part of the Council of Elders, is that true?
Yes, that hasn't happened yet, but have plans to join the Council of Elders. I guess I'm old enough to do that now.
Yeah, and I'll just say that my journey with consciousness change, you know, it's circuitous. It goes around and round, but I don't look at and feel the land in the same way that I used to. I look at the no trespassing signs that have gone up since people are moving from the south right here. And I go, this just, you know, it doesn't belong together. I look at the name New Meadows Road. Well, it's New Meadows because it used to be a salt marsh, you know, and I have wanted for years to do an ancestry group, and that's still in my desires. I talked with actually Panthea from Reach about it a while ago, and then pandemic happened and other things, but just getting together and with the root of our ancestry, understanding the history more. I was talking with Miku Paul the other day about it. And we'd just gone to a webinar with Lisa Brooks, and they were talking. Miku was saying, Lisa was talking about how, and Joe Hall, how everybody is the last Indian here, you know, and he's saying, well, it's funny because Per Paul had four kids. What happened? And then talking about, well, this one married into Penobscot, this one married here and different names. And Miku says, I got to explore my ancestry. And she said to me, well, yours is easy because you came from privileged background. And in a way it is. But I said, yeah, Miku, you know, the only people that got noticed were the men. And some of the women had names, some of them didn't, or the kids who did things that the white people thought were great. And nothing really about the lives. And I even told her about my first cousin was doing research into our family, the Beale family, which thought they were great. We always knew they weren't, but they thought they were great. And my cousin was doing research into the sort of ungreat parts of the Beale family. And my grandmother, I think, or maybe his mother said, stop the research. And so that was like, and Miku got, no way. And I went, yeah, that's, and it's affected me too, because I felt like I grew up with blinders on my head. And it's really uncomfortable. So that's part of the journey.
Yeah, it's amazing how much twisting of the narrative there is, or as Roger Paul says, twistery, you know, and obscuring and repressing and trying to. So it's interesting because we have to fight against that as well as trying to create, as Maria says, better stories for our grandchildren, stories of better neighbors, right?
Absolutely. A couple of things that popped into my mind as you were speaking, Mia, and also Ron, was that there's no doubt that there's a lot of people who are missing links of their family story, especially as we know through the Truth and Reconciliation work that there were so many children and families that were disconnected, that were, you know, taken away from their families. And, you know, I've heard so many stories over the years, especially like as a historian at the University of Maine, and people saying that they think that they have Native roots, but they really don't know, because that was something that families would be ashamed of. And Mia, you talked about, you know, how difficult it is to trace your roots, especially for a woman with your names changing. And, you know, a lot of people will say that, you know, oh, grandmother never talked about being Native or anything to do with being Native until her husband died, or until, you know, the in-laws died, and then felt safe to share information like that. So there's a lot of that happens. And so we're all still recovering our roots. And I also, it popped into my mind something that I've long said back when I was the director at the Cultural and Historic Preservation Department for Penobscot Nation. And we started doing a lot of Teach the Teacher workshops and a lot of educational work. And I always said, people are doing the best they can based on the information that they have. And they just don't know what they don't know. I mean, if you've never thought about it, you've never thought about it, right? Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate those stories of, you know, just becoming aware of your place on this earth and things like that. Yeah, powerful stories.
The more I become aware of, the more I realize how little I know. You know, it's tiny. I know it's tiny.
Well, we sure do appreciate all the work that you both have committed to Midcoast Indigenous awareness and all that work that you're doing there. So any last thoughts before we wind down?
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I mean, I just felt the heart in your invitation, which is really wonderful. Really appreciate it.
Chiwiliwan. Mm-hmm. It was a pleasure and a real pleasure to be with you all today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do hope that it's helpful and people are able to connect in to MEAG. I know from my personal experience with your group that it is a very warm and welcoming grassroots place to be. Esther mentioned the annual wellness gathering that REACH has every year. And the last one that we had 2 years ago because of COVID was down in Southern Maine, and you all had a table there. Mm-hmm. And we're tabling. And so just a great way for people to connect in.
That's great. It's all by the bootstraps, you know. We're all volunteer. And this is where I got to give kudos again to Jerry, who's a retired graphic designer. So he came up, and Zoe, who was an artist, Zoe drove, you know, drew our logo, and Jerry put it together on a poster. We're like, we have to have something. Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So with that, we are going to close our program of Dawnland Signals. I'd like to say thank you to the listeners for joining us on Dawnland Signals, Chiwiliwani to our very special guests, Mia Beal and Ron Nicholas Savisky of the Midcoast Indigenous Awareness. Thank you to our volunteer technician, Jeffrey Hodgkiss, for his assistance and support. And be sure to join us next month and every third Thursday of the month for more Dawnland Signals and more conversations of truth, healing, and change. Up-chitch.
Up-chitch.